Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
This is Sidelines
and Headlines.
Hey, we're glad with a special edition of our podcast. Why is it special? All of them are special.
They're all special.
But we do have a great guest today. We had a chance to catch up with David Pernow, the Clark Central head football coach, former head baseball coach at Georgia. Very interesting interview. I think folks are going to be interested to hear what he's got to say.
He was very gracious, very open, and he did it on a week coming off a loss Friday night.
Yeah.
So we were extremely grateful to him for doing that.
And he had a lot of insightful things to say, and I think people will find it interesting to
Absolutely.
Talk about. Of course, we're also going to talk about what happened on Friday night, what's going to happen this Friday, and then college football. Can you believe it? It starts.
My Auburn Tigers and Georgia Tech both play Friday night.
Yeah. Does Auburn play Friday?
Friday night at Baylor.
I did not know it was a Friday game. Is Coach Freeze going to be able to get off the golf course in time to get to the game?
He may. I saw a picture on social media of him with his golf club today. I don't know if that was somebody giving him a little poke or what it was, if he's really out playing. I don't think he's playing this week.
Well, he's gotten a lot of grief from his fans. They thought he was spending a little bit too much time on the links this summer.
Well, I got a feeling he's going to pull that one back up. If he can get a big win over Lane Kiffin this year, he might poke him back. You know, Lane was giving him some trouble about that.
All right, well, we'll talk a little bit about all of that and more when we're back here on Sidelines and Headlines. Hey, Jim, we had a chance to catch up with David Pernow the other day, so why don't we revisit that interview? I know you found it interesting. I sure did.
I did. Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Here's David Pernow. I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
And this is Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And we're with David Pernow, the head coach of Clark Central Gladiators. And David, you have been around Athens for a long time. The Pernow name's been here a long time. Pernow's former well. Your dad ran the Arby's restaurant for many years. And you and your brother came up through the sports programs here and went on and both competed at University of Georgia. And here you are now as the head football coach at Clark Central. But you had an unusual career path, going from playing high school football to then going to coaching college baseball. Now here you are back at college high school football. Tell us a little bit about how that worked out.
All right. Well, the thing is, I've been back every place I played. So I coached in Middle Georgia where I started my baseball career. And then I played at Georgia and then went back and coached there. And now, you know, Clark Central. So when I get fired here, I got to go get a job at the Y. So that's my last stop. I hadn't really coached at the YMCA. So.
Well, the Little League Baseball maybe could be an option for you.
Yeah. No, I
they don't pay too well.
And it's a dying breed. Travel ball has taken over. So,
well, we were talking a little bit earlier about how things have changed. A little bit about how do you feel about the changes that have come in the way that athletes paid now and all those different kind of things?
Yeah, it's it really is. I don't like it at all. I think it's horrendous. I spoke about it like in 2020 when COVID was hitting and they were announcing all this was coming down, and I was like, this is absurd. And, you know, the other thing was the whole extra year. I thought that was insane. I mean, you know, you ended up with 25, 26-year-olds playing college athletics, and you're like, I don't get it. I mean, and then you're giving them all an out. If a coach yells at them or coaches someone hard, then, and they're uncomfortable, they jump ship and can play right away. So and it's devastated the good high school athlete, not the great high school athlete. He's still getting recruited. He's still getting opportunity. But the good one that can come in a college program and really develop and take off in his tenure in college isn't getting that chance.
Not as many opportunities anymore.
Because of the portal. And I think it's a bad bad setup. I think it's not amateur athletics like college, and that's the thing about college athletics is the passion and the enthusiasm and the pageantry of, you know, the fans and all that. And I'm like, well, you listen to games, and he talks about it, whatever, a defensive back and receiver. Well, they were teammates last year, but so-and-so transferred, and they got this guy and this guy. And I'm like, you know, this is watching MLB baseball in the 70s when they first started free agency. I want to see the same guys. You know, I want to watch a kid develop and do it. And I mean, all my teams, World Series teams, had freshman All-Americans mm-hmm. on that team, in the lineup, playing every day, playing in the World Series. And I think, you know, we lost that. And I would love an opportunity to maybe get back in college baseball at that level and do it the old school way and really dig in, because there's a lot of good recruits that are out there and searching, high school kids that are searching for opportunities. And what happens is they'll go to a junior college, or they'll go to a four-year school, a D2 school or something like that, and then a D1 school will pluck them after someone else develops them and coaches them. And I just think that's just a horrendous system. And I just think it'll implode eventually.
You know, the Mercer women's basketball coach, Susie, I kind of think of her last name, she left down there because of that same situation. She could bring in players, she could develop them, but then some big school would come in and pluck them away, and so she's just no way to build momentum.
Yeah, and that's number one, but there's several. It's a bad message to our youth and our young people that are playing, the opportunity to leave your school, leave your teammates. There's no more loyalty. And it's, from a coach's standpoint, it's too difficult to build culture. Mm-hmm. And that's why I respect Kirby. And if the elite programs are recruiting, still recruiting freshmen and still developing freshmen and coaching freshmen and making them become, or helping them become men. And I think that's what college athletics is. And I think we've lost that. Mm.
Coach, you walk in your office, you see a big picture of the legendary Billy Henderson. I know you means a lot to be back coaching at your alma mater. Talk about a little bit about the impact Coach Henderson had on you as a player and as a person.
Well, I mean, not only as a player, he's the reason I'm here, is because, you know, he called me when this came open and he said, you need to take the job. And it just, I was taking the job when he said that. I mean, I didn't care.
You listen to your old coach, don't you?
I listened to Coach Henderson. I mean, I was a product of having played for him for so many years and worked for Coach Dooley. I still screw up some things, but all in all, things were going to work out because I was taught so many great lessons and gathered so much wisdom from those two guys through the years that it would have been tough for me to screw it up.
Well, y'all had a tough loss this week. Had a big win, the trophies here in your first game against Cedar Shoals. Talk about this year's team a little bit.
Yeah, we're fighting it on offense, and for good reason. I mean, when you lose Hezekiah Mylander, our quarterback last year, Corey Watkins, our running back last year, and our tight end, Zay Berry, I mean, you know, they accounted for probably 75% of our offense. I mean, and we lost all three of them. And now we have some pieces, and we have this new running back that was healthy this week, did not play a lot against Cedar, but Cy Valente, and I think he's going to give us a little bit of punch coming. He did rush for 100-something yards this weekend. We just had a tough – we would shoot ourselves in the foot the closer we got, and made it tough for us to get anything going. But hopefully with his presence that we're going to be able to piece something together, that formula offensively that will give us a chance to have success.
David, your non-region schedule is pretty tough. Going forward, you've got Jefferson next, then North Oconee. That sounds like the old Billy Henderson way of really toughening a team up. And I think you did the same when you were a baseball coach at Georgia, playing tough teams to get ready.
No question. When you're in the sport, I mean, it's kind of not – it's really not like college football, where you got to have the big wins and you got to have a good record. It's not technically as big as playoff as high school football or collegiate baseball. So all that really mattered was for me is you want to play well in conference. So you want to expose your team, your guys, your players to some tough talent before you get the conference or region play like it is in high school. And I think it really bode well for me navigating the postseason in college, having played, out of conference, Florida State, Oregon State. I mean, I would call the national champion every year, whoever won it, and try and schedule them, especially after my second, third year. And if they weren't an SEC team, I was calling them to see if I could get a game against them. And I just believe in that. I've never been a one. You see these guys with all these wins. And that stuff doesn't do anything for me.
Well, one of my memories of you was against Clemson. Of course, it was in a regional or super regional, I don't know which, and that was the game where you threw the baseballs onto the field.
Well, that was old school regional where you had to play. You were done in 3 days.
Yeah.
You didn't get that if necessary game, and we had won. The winner, Clemson, had to beat us twice. And so you talk about a long day, and it was blazing hot. I'll never forget it. And we're winning the first game 9-2. We get beat 10-9. And I'm like, but, if you go back 3 months earlier, Clemson beat us 21-4 in the regular season. And so at that time, no one had any idea that we were going to be the one seed and they were going to be the two seed and come to Athens. But nonetheless, we're in this last game, and we get base. I'll never forget it. We get bases loaded in the top of the sixth with nobody out. They bring in their left fielder, and he goes punch out, punch out, punch out. And I'm like, we never experienced anything like that in that team. I mean, we had tough times, but I mean, we don't score. And I'm like, so I'm starting to wonder now. And I said, I felt like I had to do something. And it just came up. I just walked out on the field and our guy was pitching. And, immediately you argue balls and strike. I knew I was getting tossed, but I felt like we needed something. Our kids were looking around and everybody was stunned, that it was about to come to an end. And he tossed me, and son of a gun, if those balls were just sitting there. And I was like, my youth got me there. And I threw him out there, and, fortunately, we were able to come back and
win.
Had
a couple of home runs, I think, in the 10th inning, didn't you?
Well, we ended up hitting 3 solo shots, 2 to tie it in the ninth, top of the ninth. And then I'll never forget, I'm in the locker room, and Clint Sammons comes in, our catcher. And I'm looking at the TV and listening to the radio, and he's like up third in the 10th inning. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he said, I'm just letting you know I got this. Son of a gun hit the farthest ball in his career. I'll never forget it. I mean, you talk about... And I was like, and then, of course, we were able to get out of the 10th. And
of course, you had to pay for it next year. I think they suspended you for the conference opener against LSU, I believe.
You know, Coach Dooley had a great line for me because, obviously I went in. He called me in after we won. And I go in, and, he had one more week on the job. I mean, he was going out. And I was so nervous going into the, not just the meeting, but I wanted, I think I was his last hire. And I wanted to you know, we did win the SEC that year, and I knew I wanted to get to Omaha before he went out, and he called me in, and he reprimanded me from a standpoint of talking about throwing the balls on the field, and he addressed me pretty good, and I was like, yes sir, and apologized. And then he looked up, and he took his glasses off. He said, "Now go beat the hell out of Tech." And I was like, "Yes, sir." And I was nervous going at Tech. I was like, "We got to win this," and we did. And you know, it was just a special moment.
You mentioned Coach Dooley. I know you had a very special relationship with him.
Yeah, he was second to none. I mean, he raised the bar for me at such a young age that it really made it extremely difficult for me to see any AD in the way that I saw him. I mean, he was, like I said, I'm certain he was a tremendous football coach, but I could tell you that it'd be hard pressed for me to find a better athletic director.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the members of our Rotary Club with us that Jim and I are in is Deborah Lonan, and she has quite a young man who's one of your top players, and probably, if I had to guess, is going to score higher on the SAT than you did.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of people that will do that, but but it's a recentered score now. So, yeah, they all these youth, they get all kind of advantages, but AJ is one of a kind too. I mean, like I said, he's the only kid in my tenure that never played a sub varsity game, whether JV, ninth grade, whatever. He's been varsity from day one since he rolled in here. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I think he started our second game his freshman year.
Wow.
And I mean, he was, you know, just different. And, you know, and I tell his father all the time, thank God he takes after his mother. DeBoer is awesome, but Anthony is too. They're just a really good family. And he's so intelligent and so sharp and so mature beyond his years that it's just very impressive and a joy to coach.
Well, maybe one day we can get him on here and talk to him. Yeah, we'd love to do that.
He'd be a good one.
Yeah, he'd be a good one.
Coach, we can sit here and talk to you all day. I know you're a busy man, getting ready for those Jefferson Dragons coming to town this week. We really appreciate you being with us. Hopefully we can catch up with you again
anytime
before the season's over.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot, David Pernow. We'll be back with more on Sidelines and Headlines.
Sorry we took you so long.
No, that's all right. I mean, it's
– Oh, yeah, we got it that time.
All right.
All right, hey, Blake Giles and
Jim Harden.
We're back here on Sidelines and
Headlines.
All right. Well, Jim, you went to a game Friday night, right? Saw Gainesville, is that right?
I did, and they are very impressive.
Tell me how impressive.
Wow, they played the number one team. I think the equivalent would have been that Moody. It would be, I guess, one classification lower maybe than Gainesville if you just look at the size of the schools. They were ranked number one in Alabama. I think Gainesville beat them 49-14 or
wow.
something.
Wow.
But they're good. They've got several big-time D1 players. They've got a great quarterback, a couple guys on defense. They're well coached. You know, their coach is that guy that was at Hoover, Alabama, won 5 state championships in Alabama, and they're good.
The Gainesville coach?
Yes.
Okay.
He's the guy that followed Rush Probst.
Oh, followed Rush, because Rush is at a Christian school now somewhere.
He is. The coach got something happened, and Rush is technically the interim now.
Okay.
And they played Pierce County Friday night, and I can't believe I don't know if they won or lost. But
I'm not sure about that. I'll usually try to keep up with Pierce County. A good friend of mine, Barry Roberts, was a linebacker at Pierce County back in the day, and his son Chris was a quarterback at Pierce County, and now he's a pastor down in Blackshear, Georgia, the home of Stetson Bennett.
That's what I was about to say.
Is Stetson going to be the that guy for the Rams this year. Who knows?
Man. Who knows?
Well, I got a chance, of course, to see Prince Avenue play, and they beat West Side of Macon 43-22. And I saw something I've never seen. They announced before the game that they'd had a fundraiser, and somebody bid and won the right to call the first play of the game for Prince Avenue. And so it was like a fifth grader who was the son of Mark Spain, who's in the real estate business. And so he was on the sidelines, and John Rick leans over and he whispers in his ear. And so the play call was basically a flea flicker. The quarterback takes a snap, gives it to a running back. Running back gives it back to this guy. This guy throws it back to the quarterback. Quarterback throws it down the field. And it worked.
It worked.
It went like 35 yards for the first play of the game. And so we asked Coach Rick after the game if he was smarter than a fifth grader. So, it was a fun play.
Well, he put up some points.
Yeah,
they're
they did.
Be strong.
It was a good win for them. You know, we talked a lot about Cedar Shoals and how close they came against Clark Central. They had a tougher time last week up at Monroe area.
They did.
Monroe area must be have a strong running game.
They did. I think they are. And our buddy Josh Alexander got the victory. I think they played on Thursday.
I don't know why they played on Thursday.
I didn't realize. When we talked to him, I didn't realize they were playing on Thursday.
I had no idea. I wonder if it was scheduled that way at the last minute. They won 28-0. You know, and he talked like he was going to put the game into the hands of Keon Staniford, but actually it was a running back, Peyton Prince, who had a big game, over 200 yards rushing, and a 28-0 win for the Spartans. So I'm sure they were glad to get back on the winning side of things.
Well, we talked about Clark Central a little bit. They had a tough loss.
Yeah.
And they got Jefferson coming to town, so it was not getting a lot easier. And then the next week, I think they got North Oconee.
North Oconee. You know, it was funny. David, when we were talking to him, he said he's always been up against those brothers. It was the Weeks brothers at Oconee County. It was the Johnson boys at Oconee County. And then it was, who were the other two brothers? Oh, the Brown boys at Jefferson. Sammy and now Max is up there at Jefferson. And he's got to face him. Is it this week? Is that when they play Jefferson?
Yeah, they play Jefferson this week.
So I told him, Who schedules your non-region games?
Yeah, he says that's by design.
Yeah.
I hope he's right. I hope they're getting stronger.
Yeah.
But Jefferson had a kind of a lackluster win last week against
Jackson County.
Jackson County, that's right.
I wonder, though, if it's not because Jackson County's really making some improvements. I mean, I'm just hearing just rumblings that maybe they finally are beginning to put things together there and get a program going. I was actually over there last week to see a JV game. Habersham Central played it, and I went and watched my grandson. They only played the first half because we had weather come in and lightning. Came after that, and Habersham Central won as a result. They actually probably won on the first drive of the game. Their little quarterback threw an interception, but it was called pass interference, and they just turned that around and marked right down the field and scored, and that was the difference in the game.
We've got some excellent high school football. Everybody doesn't love high school football like you and I do, but I tell you what, I think Morgan County's going to have a good team down in Madison. Like I said, obviously Jefferson, North Oconee, Gainesville, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Everything about them was impressive.
Well, Morgan County, they play at Oconee this week, and that's one of those games they play every year, been playing for 45 years. Big rivalry game. Now, Oconee, I mean, they showed something last week, shutting out Clark Central. That was only David's third shutout in his time at Clark Central. But Morgan County, they got a Christian Monfort last week rushed for 165 yards in their win over Putnam County was 46-14. So they must have a strong team.
Their quarterback's a good player.
Yeah.
Strickland kid, I think.
Davis Strickland, he's 15-20 for 195 yards, so he's a good player. Another game I'm looking forward to is Prince Avenue is going to be going to Blessed Trinity.
Yeah.
And they've got one of the best defensive line prospects in the country, and DJ Jacobs is. His dad played at Georgia, and I saw him play last year against Prince, and he was a handful as a sophomore, and people are already really excited about what he's going to do at the next level, and he's just a junior. So that's going to be a tough game for Prince. They came so close last year. They lost 23-21 at the end of the game on a kick, field goal kick. I think their kicker kicked three field goals against them. And so it was a close game last year. Let's see what they can do going over there this year. So I'm looking forward to that game. Stevens County's over at, Cedar Shoals is at Stevens County. Cedar Shoals kind of, as you say, took a little step back with that Monroe area loss, but they're looking for their first win. Athens Academy is going to host somebody named Shaw. Now, where's Shaw from? Do you know?
Shaw, as I mentioned earlier, the fight, they had a big, they're from Columbus.
Oh, is that one of the fight was?
That was one of the fight with Northside Columbus, which Northside Columbus, I think, is a relatively new school. They've only been around a few years, but I saw some clips on the internet. It wasn't good, and I know, you know, we don't need to be talking about fights. It's kind of a negative thing, but I think it was Northeast Macon and Southwest Macon had a big fight. Mm-hmm. So GHSA's involved in trying to figure out what's going on. Whatever happened to sportsmanship? And
which, you know, we talked about David with this about, you know, he's got a special relationship with the Cedar Shoals coach, Rusty Sharpia, because he met him through his cousin, Chris Morocco, who was the quarterback at Clemson at the time. Rusty was up there at Clemson, and then he said, you know, there wasn't a lot of things to do in Clemson on the weekend. They'd come to Athens to have fun, and so they got to be good friends. And I said, you know, there's a misnomer that coaches don't like each other. But there's the coaching fraternity is real, and they all have a very healthy respect for one another, if not an outright fondness for what each other does. And so yeah, I think it still prevails at that level. And I think for the most part, you put North Oconee and Oconee County on the field. They both want to win, obviously. But those guys have been hanging around each other since they were grade school. They know each other. They're in Boy Scout troops together. They play Little League baseball together, youth football, all those kind of things. So it's a pride issue, I'm sure. But they don't hate those guys. Yeah, they hate losing to them, but they don't hate them.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. So are you going to a game Friday?
Well, I'm probably going to stay home and watch college football Friday night.
Well, that's right. Auburn's playing that's Friday. Right. Now, I don't know anything about Baylor. Tell me about Baylor.
I don't know a lot about him either. My son, he did the old, remember Jimmy the Greek on the NFL Today when he would go down and do the line item, you know, offensive line versus the other team's offensive line, all that. My son, who follows it closer than I do, he seemed like Auburn got to check more boxes than Baylor.
Oh, okay.
You know, that they should win. But going out there, first game of the season, Friday night, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn, you know, to hear everybody, the Auburn people talk, they've done a lot of the right things behind the scenes. It just hadn't resulted in wins. You know, they've had a hard time just winning a ball game mm-hmm. when they had a chance the last couple of years. So, but I think if they can get it done against Baylor, that'll be big for them.
Yeah.
If they can win a couple early, I think, I don't want to sound like a homer, but I think Auburn might be the surprise team of the conference.
Well, I mean, they're already celebrating this week at Auburn, all those extra national championships that they've declared. How did that work out?
I tell you what, there was some really some funny stuff on social media about that. I told my son, who was just becoming a fan when the 2004 team, you know, went undefeated mm-hmm. and got left out.
Yeah.
Which, interestingly,
that was Tuberville's team, right?
That was.
Yeah.
Interestingly, a couple of things about that season, you know, Southern Cal was national champs, and then later on that title basically got vacated uh-huh. because of probation. So, you know, maybe Auburn kind of has a halfway claim to that.
A legitimate claim here.
But my son, he always you bring that up and he gets all bent out of shape about it. I'm like, buddy, I'm still mad about 1983 when we got cheated out of it. So the three modern ones, 1983, 1993, which was Terry Bowden, they were on probation, mm-hmm. which was a crazy year.
Mm-hmm.
But in 93, they beat Florida at home. If they'd had to play Florida again in Atlanta in a rematch in the championship game, they would have probably lost, and nobody would remember them like they do. But 2004, 1983, I could talk for an hour about 1983. That's when I started getting gray hair. I was 15 years old, I think. But back in the days of the polls, you know, they weren't the only ones
oh,
that got
yeah.
you know, you could go undefeated and end up being number three or
something.
So, but it was a crazy, if you want, anybody wants to Google it and read about 1983, how that all panned out with, if you remember, Miami was number five, Nebraska was number one, and they beat Nebraska and went from 5-1. It was a crazy the way it all ended. But
well, that was the year Texas had a chance
and
to win.
They
in
would
Georgia.
Have been number one if they
and Georgia beat them in the Cotton Bowl 10-9. And people have made a joke. It's always 10-9 in Texas, you know.
But anyway, you shouldn't get me started. I get my blood pressure up talking about that. But it was kind of funny, you know. Everybody does it. Georgia didn't used to claim 1942.
Well, now people are saying they should claim 1946 as well. When they were 11-0, that was Charlie Trippi's last year, and they beat North Carolina in the Sugar Bowl, I think, that year. I don't know who else had a claim that year. That was when the service academies were still really strong.
Right.
Army and Navy, Glenn Blanchard and...
Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis.
Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis won the Heisman Trophies back-to-back, and really I always thought Trippi should have won one of those Heisman Trophies. I mean, he was one of the greatest players of all time. But, you know, that was Eastern media. Who knows? I don't know whether it's...
With the Alabama fans, they can't give Auburn a hard time. I think they claim a couple. They lost four games. But you're a Bulldog, Blake. What's your gut feeling on this?
Oh, Mike. Well, the gut feeling is Georgia's going to win the opener. They're playing Marshall. I actually think they might cover this big, wide 39.5 point spread. Georgia doesn't usually cover those kind of things. But Marshall, I mean, their coach left last year and went to Southern Miss and took 22 players with him.
That's crazy.
I mean, just gutted the team. Marshall has not been gutted like that since the plane crash. And, of course, this is a much less tragic situation than the plane crash. And I'm glad that didn't happen. But I just feel like this is a brand-new Marshall football team. And for them to come up against Georgia, I just think Georgia's going to be able to have its way in this game. I tell you, though, there's a lot of question marks. Somebody said this is the most wide-open the Southeastern Conference has ever been, and maybe it is. Who's the dominant team?
Well, I'm sure, I don't know if Kirby would admit it, but he's probably happy he's got two games to kind of get feet wet with a new quarterback. But I agree with you. I wouldn't bet a nickel on anybody. You got first week, you got LSU and Clemson.
Oh, what a game.
That'll be interesting.
Brian Kelly doesn't win season openers with LSU.
That's right.
But who knows about Clemson either?
I think that one will be real interesting. Of course, Ohio State and Texas, that's the one everybody will be interested in. Virginia Tech and South Carolina will be an interesting
game.
The Beamer Bowl.
Who's Frank pulling for in that game?
I don't know. He might have to stay home.
And your blood's probably thicker than retirement. So I remember Barbara Dooley, who used to wear orange when Derek was up there. So
yeah, that was big. For a Georgia person to wear orange. But I think, again, I predict Auburn to be my surprise team. Not saying they're going to win it, but I think they're going to be a lot better than people think they're going to be. South Carolina's getting a lot of love from people. If I was a South Carolina fan, I'd be a little nervous.
You know, the thing I think about South Carolina is back in the, I think it was in the 80s, they had that team that was undefeated, and they lost to Navy.
1984.
Yeah, I mean, they were on the way to possibly winning a national championship and lost to Navy. I remember Wayne Ford, who was a South Carolina guy, used to sit across the desk from me in the Athens Banner-Herald, and I always liked to gig him about that from time to time. He was a South Carolina guy. But, But, you know, Georgia, they're going to be fine defensively. They recruited well. They've always coached well. Kirby's a defensive guy. It could be a really good defense. I mean, there's some new holes they got to fill, secondary. And they stacked in the linebackers. They brought in some great line play on the defensive front. I'm really looking forward to seeing Elijah Griffin play, the guy out of Savannah Christian. Christian Miller's back. I think those guys are going to be solid. All questions are on the offensive side of the football. Yeah, we got Gunnar Stockton, and he's the guy. But is he the guy? I don't know. And it's really kind of unusual for Kirby to go through a season with one quarterback. He's done it with Jake Fromm a couple of times. He did it with Stetson Bennett one time, and he did it Carson Beck. Was Beck the starter for 2 years at Georgia? And other than that, the guy that we thought was going to be the starter at the beginning of the year was not the starter the rest of the year, because you look ahead with Jacob Eason didn't start the first game, but he wound up being the starter as a freshman. But then, you know, he didn't play much after that. And then you look at JT Daniel. We thought he was going to be the guy. Dwan Mathis, he's still playing.
I saw that. Seventh year.
How does that work? How do you get 7 years of eligibility?
Well, it's unbelievable how that works, to be honest with you. That I think you and I may have talked about this on one of our earlier episodes, and I'm sure a lot of people will remember.
Well, if you hadn't seen it, go back and look for
that's
it.
That's right. Like us. I made the comment, Dabo Swinney was a much better coach in those years when he had Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson than he's been. And the other thing, as great as Nick Saban was, I think he got a little bit lucky with a string of great quarterbacks he had. I'm not sure he did a lot other than just sign the right guy, which that's a credit to them for doing that. But my point is, it would be interesting if Gunner, you know, they don't get the quarterback, quite get the quarterback play they've been used to, will they be able to compensate and still be?
Well, you know, some naysayers might say that even last year they didn't get great quarterback play out of Carson Beck, but I really thought that he did fine. I think the issue was on the other end. I mean, they led the nation practically in drop balls. I think I saw a number somewhere, 82 drop balls. Is that, can that be right?
I mean, that's
like six or seven a game.
Yeah, that's...
You can't win a foot. No. It's hard to win like that. And yet, they won the conference championship. So, you know, are we going to be any better at receiver this year? We've got tall guys. They brought in that guy Noah Thomas from Texas A&M, and then they brought back Colby Young, and those are two guys you'd want to have on your basketball team.
Right.
And they can go up and win the jump ball, and then everybody's all excited about Zachariah Branch, the transfer from Southern Cal. We'll just have to see. I can remember when Demetrius Robertson transferred from Cal, and he caught 80 balls out there. He probably didn't catch 15 balls in 3 years at Georgia.
Yeah.
So you just never know.
Well, I promise you there's been an emphasis on that in the offseason.
You know what? You know what I'm a little ticked off about is I've heard that Arian Smith, he's not dropping balls in the NFL. He's catching everything.
That's right.
How does that work? What was the magic elixir that got him straightened out like that? Hey, and the other thing is the ground game for Georgia. It was subpar last year. Etienne was a solid player, but not great. Frazier did well, but not great. Now he's the guy, but I don't know if he's big enough to be the guy.
Yeah, I wonder that too.
Yeah, so, and then offensive line is almost totally new. Are they going to be able to protect the quarterback? Are they going to be able to open holes? There's just still a lot of questions about this Georgia offense. But, as we say, wide open SEC, they could still.
Oh, yeah.
They could do it.
They've raised the bar. They won the SEC championship last year, and people thought it was kind of a disappointing end. Lost in the playoffs.
Hey, when you win a championship, it's a good year, man.
Yeah, the SEC. I think their roster, top to bottom, will still be as good or better than anybody. I think the problem is, and everybody knows this, I just think as fans we don't think about this, with the portal and the way it works, you don't have to be better than somebody 1 to 85. You just, if you can be better at them 1 to 30 and play good, like kind of like Ole Miss last year. I think if Georgia played Ole Miss five times, they'd have probably won four. But the day they played in Oxford on a rainy day, Ole Miss had enough athletes they could put out there on the field, and they beat them.
I don't think Kirby wants to go to Oxford anymore. He's been twice, and got his lunch handed to him both times.
Yeah, Freeze was the coach when the first time.
Okay.
They beat him by about 40, I think.
Yeah.
But
Texas and Ohio State, number one against number three. Before we get there, Penn State, number two. Do you see any world in which Penn State ends the season as the number two team?
I'm just like everybody else. I think that coach is a good coach, but it's just show me. You know,
that's right. You got to show me. Yes, yeah. Right. Something always seems to happen to set them back, and they just don't fall through. But so it's the Arch Manning story. Who was Ohio State? Julian Sayin, mm-hmm. who was an Alabama commit under Saban and backed yep. out and went to Ohio State, and he's going to be the guy. And he's a freshman, right?
Yeah.
So two inexperienced quarterbacks in the marquee game in the country. Who do you like in that game?
I don't know. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. I think Texas is going to be good. I don't, you know, I agree with, I think, I don't know if you heard Steve Spurrier, you know, he kind of posed the question, if Arch Manning's so good, why didn't he, you know, why was he playing behind the other guy the last 2 years, you know? In one way, he's kind of like Gunnar Stockton, who knows? But in another way, you know.
Well, let me ask you about that. You know, so there was Quinn Ewers, a guy who had given his heart and soul to Texas. And, I mean, they go to Michigan. They went up there. I mean, the guy, he won some big games. Would it have been the prudent thing to do if Arch Manning was slightly better? I don't know if he's light years better, to say, well, hey, I'm sorry, Quinn. We brought in this young hotshot guy. We're going to bump you for him. Does that hurt? And when you go to recruit the next guy or whatever, and can you keep the people from transferring? Or do you have to manage your team like that and think about those kind of things?
I think you do. I think they, for whatever reason, if you kind of believe what you hear, when you hear the Manning family talk, you know, it was almost like Arch made a decision. He wanted to go to Texas, and he was going to stay there and make it work, which, you know, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people don't like to say this. And I love football coaches. I have some of my favorite people in my life. But they all can be a little bit full of you-know-what sometimes. You know, I mean, the guy, they'll all tell you, you know, the guy that's – well, some of them will tell you, the guy that's best in practice. And then some of them will tell you, well, the guy that gives us the best chance to win. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not always the same guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You could look at that with the Stetson Bennett story.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what Georgia thought, that they had a better chance, first with JT Daniels, first with Dwan Mathis. You know, they just thought they had a better chance with those guys, and it wound up. The best guy was wearing number 13 with the scout team for a while.
That's right. Well, people forget Herschel Walker didn't start his first game at Georgia, and about three quarters later, he was the best player in the country.
Well, yeah, I think he could have started.
But I'm just saying, you know, and he had a short window. He showed up August 1st and only practiced for 3 or 4 weeks. That's different. But
he could have showed up the day before the game.
That's right. But it's true. It's true. The guy that plays when the lights come on is game time is not mm-hmm. always the guy that's the best guy in practice.
Well, my first inclination was I thought Ohio State would win the game just because they're home, but I'm beginning to come around and think Texas is going to win. Freshman quarterback for Ohio State. I tell you who I like for Ohio State, though, is Jeremiah Smith, that receiver. I read a neat story about him and his dad. When Jeremiah was a little kid, I think they called him JJ at the time, he tried out for the little neighborhood football team and didn't make it. And this is the kid in the pickup games. He was the star. You remember those kind of guys. Yeah, everybody picks him first, and he was the guy they picked first. And so he came crying to his dad and said, I didn't make the team. And his dad was a little surprised because he knew how good an athlete his son was. So he went and talked to the coach, and the coach said, well, oh, I didn't know that was your son. I put him on the team. So, no, we're good. We're good. So they're riding home, and little JJ's crying, and he says, son, said, we're going to be okay, but this is never going to happen again. So he didn't have any football experience, but he knew people who did. And they began coaching him when he was 8, 9 years old about how to be a receiver. And the guy asked him years later, said, it must be gratifying to know that all that time you put in, invested in him, he turned into a great football player. And this is what I really like about the story. His dad said, you know, I never looked at it like that. It was just it was a great time I had for me to spend with JJ, me be a dad and him be my son. I thought, man, what a great story. Uh-huh. What a great family to come from. So he's great a player as he is. I wish he wore red and black instead of red and silver. But what a great player. So,
well, he's people are acknowledging nationally in the media what a good player. If he has a great year, he may win. He may win that new guy who wins the Heisman Trophy.
Well, that's right. The door's been cracked open now for non-quarterbacks and non-running backs to win it, and maybe he can be the guy that would do that and everything. So, good representative. Here's a game we hadn't talked about. Alabama, Florida State.
That's right. That's the other one I forgot to mention.
The quarterback for Florida State, Tommy Castellanos. The last time he was on that field, he was playing for Boston College, and he beat Florida State.
Yep.
And did he play for Gus Malzahn at Central Florida before he transferred to Boston College?
I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that.
Because now he's, you know, Gus is the offensive coordinator.
That might have been the connection that you say that. I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure.
So Castellanos, I have a friend of mine who knew him in high school and counseled with him, and he's a guy who's he's 5'11", 210 pounds. He's more of a gunslinger than he is a pure passer, and he's a guy who's going to he's hard to tackle. He's hard to bring down. It's going to be really interesting to see what he can do against Alabama. That's going to be a tough game for Florida State. I mean, of course, they had a tough season last year. Everybody.
My gut, I wouldn't bet a nickel on that one. I think Alabama's going to be really good, or they're going to maybe take a step back. But, their coach, I mean, that guy's a good coach.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to have athletes. I don't think they're going to, the next few years, if he stays and is successful, I don't think they're going to be consistently as great as they were under Saban, but they're going to be right there. When they're hitting on all cylinders and he's got the quarterback he wants like he did with Penix up in Washington, I think you'll see them be a competitor. And I just think they're going to beat Florida State.
It's interesting you talk about as dominant as they were under Saban. You talk about Saban kind of caught lightning in a bottle with his quarterbacks. But did Saban come along at an opportune time when other programs were not really at their strongest? I mean, yeah, Florida had a period there, but Urban Meyer was gone really by the time that Saban hit his peak at Alabama. Tennessee was never much of a threat. Georgia had its moments, but they never could get over that Alabama hurdle. That 2012 game still haunts Georgia fans to this day. And then you look at LSU, they were up and down, you know, Les Miles, he won a national championship, but they weren't quite as consistent. Well, now you look at the SEC, you got to believe that Texas is entrenched with Steve Sarkisian. They're in a good place. Obviously, Georgia with Kirby Smart. I mean, there's not a program in the country that wouldn't trade places with Georgia. Who else possibly could fit into that realm right now? Maybe Ole Miss with Kiffin, but you wonder, can they attract the talent like they need to? They certainly were good enough last year. So I wonder if there'll ever be anybody quite as dominant again as Alabama was under Saban.
Well, it's an interesting question. I think, and I love, Georgia fans don't like this, but I love Steve Spurrier, and I think what he did at Florida, you think, go back to the Auburn 2004 team, when they went undefeated and got left out, after that, it became where if you didn't even have to win the SEC championship. You didn't even have to win your division. There was a couple of Alabama teams that won it without even winning their division.
Mm-hmm.
Before Saban came, like Spurrier, if they would have had the 4-team playoff and they would have, you know, they had great teams.
Oh, yeah.
That won the SEC and didn't get a chance to play for the national championship.
Well, even Georgia in 2002 when they lost only to Florida that year. That was a team that everybody thought if there had been a playoff, that was a team that would have had a chance. The 2012 team that lost to Alabama in that SEC championship when they got all the way down the field on the last play of the game. People think if they win that game, they play Notre Dame.
And they'll beat them.
And they beat Notre Dame.
But I think prior to, just say 2004, you know, you had to win the SEC to have a chance to play for a title.
Mm-hmm.
All that changed, and I think Saban kind of slid in the back door a couple times when, in a different time, he wouldn't even have had the opportunity. That's not really taking anything away from him,
mm-hmm.
but it's and I think you're right, there's less it's less competitive top to bottom during most of the time he was there than it was at other times.
Well, we're sitting here talking about what's coming up this Saturday. Invariably, this time next week, something unusual will have happened this weekend that we did not have any idea of foreseeing. Even last weekend, with only like two or three significant games, we saw Kansas State lose to Iowa State over there in Ireland. And then what happens after the game? The quarterback's dad and the quarterback's brother getting a fist fight in the parking lot. And it was a humdinger from what everybody tells me.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. And then the other thing that was, I thought, really funny about the weekend was Hawaii beating Stanford with a kicker from Japan who learned how to kick on YouTube. What have you learned how to do on YouTube?
I probably should utilize that more. I might be a little more, get more things done. But you are right. I think this is why we love it so much. There'll be some surprises.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we're going to have no idea what they are because there'll be surprises.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll, you know, and there'll be some disappointments. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody we think is going to be good is not going to be as good as we think they are.
All right, here we go. I'm going to play a little game with you.
All right.
Let's just go down the SEC, and I'm just going to say, for each team, are they going to do better or worse than last year? Can't do the same. Got to do better or worse.
All right.
So let's go in alphabetical order. Alabama.
Better.
Better. Arkansas.
Better.
Auburn.
Better.
Florida.
Better.
Georgia.
Not better.
Worse then.
Worse.
All right. Kentucky.
Better. Everybody can't be better. Though,
I know
they?
It. LSU.
Worse.
Missouri.
Worse.
Mississippi.
Ole worse.
Miss. Mississippi State.
Better.
Let's see. Oklahoma.
Better.
Who's comes next? Tennessee.
Worse.
Texas.
Worse.
Texas A&M.
Better.
Vanderbilt.
Worse.
All right. So we're gonna play that clip back at the end of the year and see how you did, Jim. That's, put you on the spot there.
That's like we're saying. There's going to be some surprises. I'm telling you. I'm probably wrong. But again, like we were talking about South Carolina earlier. If I was a South Carolina.
Oh, we didn't
fan,
say South Carolina. I would have left them out.
I think they're going to be worse.
They're going to be worse. Okay.
I'd be nervous if I was a Gamecock. I don't think there is. I think last year was a little bit of. I don't know.
Well, they're still kicking themselves. They didn't beat Alabama last year. You know, so. We'll see. We'll see. Well, Jim, so it'll be interesting. We'll have some real big games. It's a great first weekend of college football. We've talked about, you know, you got Texas and Ohio State and Auburn and Baylor and Alabama, Florida State. And, gosh, there's just some great games. Clemson, LSU is going to be a great game. So there's a lot to keep us occupied this weekend.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be fun. Watch the football thing real quick. I know we probably need to wrap up. I watched part of. Have you watched any of the Netflix special on the Dallas Cowboys?
I have not.
I watched the first episode last night. I couldn't help myself. I feel like I need to take a shower after I got done. But it was really good. It was good. I would recommend it. And do you ever watch the show True South on SEC Network?
Every now and then.
John T. Edge goes around the food. He's going to be down in Central Georgia, my stomping grounds. The episode is going to air, I think, Tuesday after Labor Day. And they're going to New Way Wieners down in Macon. Do you know about New Way? They're going to Fresh Air Barbecue. I'm sure.
I know about Fresh Air
down in Jackson. So I'm excited about that.
Have you eaten New Way Wieners?
Oh, I ate every Saturday of my life. My son and I did.
Well, now see, up here we grew up with the Varsity.
Yeah. That's
so. How do they compare?
New Way. It's a Greek family, and. The chili on the chili dogs, in most people's opinion, especially Middle Georgia people like me, is better. It's a real unique.
Well, that's what to me separates the Varsity is the chili they use.
But I'm telling you, most people, if they're honest, I know people are biased. They'll always say the Varsity's better. But the New Way chili is good. It's special. Well, you need to check it out on SEC Network, and we'll. Right down there Wednesday.
There you go. That sounds like a, hey, we'll
We'll do an episode from down there. Why don't we do that?
Live from New Way.
Yeah, New Way Wieners, and I'll try not to spill mustard on my shirt.
Yes, sir.
Hey, we hope you'll like us and follow us and subscribe to us and tell your friends about it and spread the word and tell them to watch Sidelines and Headlines and hope you find it interesting. And we're going to get an email address up soon that you can communicate with us, and we'll be on Facebook. We got all kinds of things coming down the pike. We're just a fledgling podcast trying to make our way in the podcast world. So
we try hard.
There we go. So stay with us, and we'll see you back later.
Thank you all for being with us.